It's GDP Day. We're having pastries. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Tracy Samuelson in for David Brancaccio. 4.1%. That's how fast the economy grew in the second quarter, according to the Commerce Department. And yeah, we own our nerdery around here, so there are pastries for GDP Day. This is a strong number, almost double last quarter. A major driver of that was consumer spending, which grew 4%. Marketplace's Andy Euler looks at this important component of GDP.
Whether we buy stuff largely depends on how much money we have and what we think our future income's going to be. Up until the recession, economists traditionally thought of consumer spending as the volatile part of the economy. Is the consumer feeling good today? Austin Goolsbee teaches economics at the University of Chicago and was an economic advisor in the Obama administration. He says over the past few years, consumer spending has become very predictable.
Consumer spending is sort of the slow, steady race winner here. You know, consumer spending has kind of turned itself into the tortoise in the race.
Consumers are confident because they have jobs. Unemployment is at near record lows. But what about that trade war? Bob Murphy, an economics professor at Boston College, says he actually doesn't think that influences when everyday Americans buy stuff.
I don't know if they make the connection that directly, but things are likely to cost them more down the road, and therefore they rush out and buy today.
Because prices haven't risen dramatically. The cost to make things is higher, but companies are largely taking the brunt of that pain, at least for now. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
President Trump, speaking about GDP growth this morning, said we're going to go a lot higher than 4.1% going forward. But most economists and analysts agreed this level of growth is unique to this quarter and won't be quite this high in the future. We learned more yesterday about the Trump administration's closely watched trade policy from none other than Robert Lighthizer, the U.S. Trade Representative. Lighthizer testified before a Senate subcommittee and covered a lot of ground. The beginning of talks between the U.S. and the EU, the status of NAFTA negotiations, China. Marketplace's Renata Sago has followed this for us. So, Renata, what did we learn from the 3 hours or so of testimony?
This session was about two things: who the president's trade deals are meant to help and when those trade deals will become concrete. Some lawmakers asked about the emergency aid package for farmers. Why just them and not small businesses hit by tariffs, too? Other lawmakers asked about the very status of the U.S. trade deficit, whether the $800 billion deficit that President Trump often refers to holds up if you account for U.S. services we sell to other countries. Lighthizer said, yes, there is a surplus of services with some countries.
But overall, it's clearly a very negative trade situation. But if you don't accept that, then everything we're doing is not, you know, doesn't make sense.
So he added that the idea is to really focus on bilateral agreements because, according to the Trump administration, they give the U.S. more leverage.
So did Lighthizer offer any new information about those talks between the U.S. and the EU from earlier this week?
He did. He said that the whole agricultural industry is a key component to these talks, but it doesn't really seem like EU officials are on the same page. They said it's just soybeans and beef.
What about negotiations with NAFTA or China?
With China, he said that's going to take some time, and he justified that by emphasizing the weight of what the White House says China's done.
They're taking advantage of an open U.S. economy, they're using state capitalism, and they're taking U.S. jobs and U.S. wealth.
Lighthizer said a NAFTA deal is going to be finalized soon, but that's been trade officials' response for months now.
Marketplace's Renata Sago, thanks. Sticking with trade, the Senate yesterday approved a bill without debate that would cut tariffs on some imports. Nearly half of those items are produced in China, according to a Reuters analysis.
Not everyone gets a chance to study the economy in school. Anyway, who doesn't need a brush up? Marketplace helps you continue your education in a way that we hope is smart, accessible, and hopefully even a bit fun. Your donation is not only an investment in your own learning, but also in helping us make more people smart about the economy. And that, we think, is good for everyone. To learn how you can help, visit marketplace.org/investors. Thank you.
Puerto Rico is billions of dollars in debt. It declared a form of bankruptcy last year. Its finances are now overseen by a federal control board, and that was before Hurricane Maria caused widespread devastation. Puerto Rico is still struggling to recover, and it's looking to private investors for help. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer reports.
Want to buy an airport? There are three for sale in Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico rented a booth at a recent trade conference just outside Washington, aimed at luring international investors to the U.S. Yes, one of Puerto Rico's challenges is reminding investors that it is a U.S. territory.
If you do business in Puerto Rico, you're doing business in the U.S.
That's Puerto Rico's Commerce Secretary Manuel Laboy Rivera. He says, in a weird way, Puerto Rico is being rediscovered in the wake of Hurricane Maria.
It put us on the map.
Puerto Rico is using its time in the spotlight to sell itself, literally, proposing public-private partnerships in which private companies manage airports, water meters, the electric grid, collecting fees along the way. The government is even privatizing student housing on a University of Puerto Rico campus. Puerto Rico's biggest airport is already privatized. Why turn to the private sector?
The government has no cash, and so a partner with cash is appealing.
Mirna Rivera Cardona heads Consultiva, an investment advisory firm in Puerto Rico. She worries that outsiders will crowd out local firms. She's already seeing an influx of investment in Puerto Rican real estate. Some of those investors moved to Puerto Rico from the U.S. mainland.
They're establishing their businesses in Puerto Rico. They're establishing residence in Puerto Rico.
Back at the trade conference, Tom McCosker tells me he moved to Puerto Rico from New York in 2014. He runs an investment bank and debt collection company, employing almost 50 locals. He rode out Hurricane Maria in his high-rise condo.
It was scary. The door to the terrace actually blew open.
Along with hurricanes, the investors Puerto Rico has managed to attract also have to deal with creaky infrastructure. McCosker says the power went out for a day recently, but no matter, he just turned on his generator. He also has water and food stockpiled. He's got backup plans and backups for the backups. I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
And I'm Tracy Samuelson with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.